our vision is to use the app as kind of a be your own bank, where you have maybe your hot wallet is there, but you're also connected to your ledger for, you know, only some transactions you can do there, but you still keep it on your ledger, but you also have your card enabled. So for example, you can keep your funds secure in ledger and then only transfer and a small amount that you will need for your purchases on your hot wallet. And then this is the wallet that is linked to the card, and then basically kind of have the entire cycle.
Hey everyone, I have the fantastic pleasure of speaking with the one and only Pedro from DoorWallet. How's it going?
Hi mate, it's going well, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, it's been I've been doing a big deep dive, of course, into the greater Door chain and Maya ecosystems. And it definitely, DoorWallet was what is probably my favorite wallet to use in that interface. I know I used a few of the different ones in the ecosystem, but definitely stuck out to me as something kind of unique. And so I definitely wanted to get you on the show to talk a little bit about this whole thing. So first, would you mind kind of introducing yourself and how you got into crypto?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Pedro. I'm originally from Mexico. I have been in crypto since 2017, initially as kind of a interested person on the intersection of finance and tech. So my background is in industrial engineering. Then I did a master's in finance. So this cohort between finance tech has always been something that has interested me. And funnily enough, how I entered crypto was because of traditional finance not working as expected. So I used to live in Germany, and I wanted to open investment accounts. I wanted to be able to buy stocks, ETF, and it turned out to be a very complex process. So even for an advanced country, you had to receive some documents, all these risk disclosures that were not easily available in other languages. And anyhow, the entire process took around 30 days. So I wasn't very thrilled with that. And after a week, I said, okay, let's try this out. And I opened my first crypto account. And the next day I was able to go. And yeah, that's how I started. I made my first purchase of Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Dogecoin back in those days. And since then, it's been a journey of first understanding the technology. And I think there's several aspects to how I see the entire space. So one, as a financial freedom enabler. So sending money to other countries has been a big use. It has not really fulfilled its promise yet, but still, even with these problems, it has still been a great alternative. But I also see it as other areas, as, you know, protecting yourself from governments, having an alternative to own your own money. And from another part, more from the investor side, as a kind of blue ocean of opportunities. So I see it always in these three aspects, and I started to get more and more involved. Then in 2018, I was a co-founder of a project in the EOS ecosystem, and then later on joining DoorWallet to start this new project in the DoorChain ecosystem. We, as DoorWallet, were the first, or the, can I say, which was for mobile. So our focus has always been mobile first. And from there on, we have grown. DoorWallet was founded in 2021, so right in the bull market. And we have been working so all this time to keep improving, and now serving 50,000 downloads and around 7,000 to 8,000 monthly active users.
Yeah, and so what's kind of the thought process behind DoorWallet's creation? I have to admit I got very confused, because I got into using DoorChain in the ChaosNet days, and then the way you use DoorChain at the time was DoorSwap, which is not officially related to the team, but the name is very similar. And then there's DoorWallet, And I got those three very like confused a whole lot in the early days, but I kind of have grown to like Thorwallet a whole lot more. And then when it was the first one to do the Maya integration, then that's when I especially was like, okay, this is the one I'm going to use from here on out. So what's kind of the, I guess, the founding reason, or why does Thorwallet exist?
Yes, the idea for Tor Wallet started from my co-founder Marcel. Basically, we both have been in this space for a long time, and we had several ideas as we see things coming and going on the crypto. One thing that really caught our attention initially with Torchain was not really the cross-chain swaps, and something was something that came later. But the thing that caught our attention was that you were able to get yield on your Bitcoin native Bitcoin. So pooling Bitcoin, and for the most part, Bitcoin has been left out of the entire DeFi explosion. So that was something that was interesting for us, because even in the last cycle, end of 2020, 2021, where you wanted to get the yield on Bitcoin, it was always you had to go to a centralized option. So either Binance or all the other ones that went bust, Celsius, and where they would give you pennies on your Bitcoins, and you definitely had a different risk exposure. So we were thinking, okay, this is interesting. And then we reached out to the core team, and so basically Torchain is the technology, and also now Maya, that we are building on top of. And we got a grant from the Torchain ecosystem to start building Tor Wallet. Once we had an MVP, then they were one of the first investors into the project, and from there on we raised $5 million. At the end of the bull market, we were one of the last ones to kind of enter into that possibility, and that has allowed us to basically have enough funding to keep developing and growing the project. So we started as a wallet, but then we expanded our view as DEX, so that's why now it's Tor Wallet DEX. And we also then introduced as a second product the web app interface. So we still remain heavily focused on mobile, but we are making great steps into improving on many fronts, and one of those is the web app.
Yeah, it's so it's kind of interesting. I've noticed that there's a lot of there's kind of a lot of a crossover with, a lot of modern wallets. I did a lot. I'm very focused in the payments part of the space, and the there's very few wallets that are very focused for payments, but I do notice a lot of in the mobile area, like for example the Edge wallet is kind of transitioned more towards like a portfolio app. And uses more, starting to use things like Thorchain backend for swaps, and it seems like Thorwallet's kind of ahead of the game on that by just being sort of native in that in that whole thing. So, first, which chains does Thorwallet support right now? Off the top of my head, of course, I know it's all the Thor like Thorchain, and then the Maya protocol, and then what other, I guess, DEXs are aggregated like Ethereum
Yeah,
or whatever.
so we support all Torchain, as you said, all Maya chains. We also have integrated Rango, so like all EVM aggregating. So think of Uniswap, not Uniswap, but 1inch, which also uses sometimes Sushi or Uniswap. We have integrated Rango for all EVM transactions. So for like the, let's say, long tail transactions of assets, we have Rango. But our core user base is really focused on Torchain and Maya. So those are where our users are right now. And I think there's a lot of things happening over the last months with Torchain. And I think what, for example, with streaming swaps, it's a huge change. For those that don't know, you can break down a swap into smaller swaps. And that has made Torchain now extremely competitive in swaps, for example, Bitcoin, Ethereum, or even just Ethereum stable coins, where before Torchain was not as competitive as, for example, Uniswap transaction. So I think this is also going to change the structure of the user base, because now you will have more options for those that are trying to make large swaps between stables. Now you will be able to do that on a more decentralized structures, right? Because in still in Uniswap, And users are always kind of the ones who dictate what is the most used thing. But one of the cool things about TorChain is you don't have this front, you know, this EVM problem where somebody fronts your transaction and MAV and all of this, because in TorChain there's a fee, dynamic fee. So if you try, if you were trying to do a huge transaction before, there was kind of an associated fee to a large mm-hmm. volume. And that's why now we're separating breaking down into smaller sub swaps that you can enable larger transactions. And this has kind of kicked off a very interesting set of users that are coming now as larger users. And one of that is linked to also providing the users with more tools for them to interact. So for example, Ledger integration now on the web app is live. And we are gonna bring also Ledger to mobile. So with that, we expect, or what we aim to have is, our vision is to use the app as kind of a be your own bank, where you have maybe your hot wallet is there, but you're also connected to your Ledger for, you know, only some transactions you can do there, but you still keep it on your Ledger. But you also have your card enabled. So for example, you can keep your phone secure in Ledger, and then only transfer a small amount that you will need for your purchases on your hot wallet. And then this is the wallet that is linked to the card, and then basically kind of have the entire cycle. So that's kind of the vision. And it also has gone hand in hand with the fallout of the 2022 bear market, where like a lot of people have gotten awareness of not your keys, not your funds, and that transition is still taking place, but I think we are making a lot of progress in that area as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And so before we kind of go more into that whole model, how does the DEX aggregation kind of thing work behind the scenes? So for the average user, I think the average user just sees this as a, or the uneducated user, let's say, sees this as a swap service of sorts, where you just, I want to swap this for that, and they pick it, and they don't know how it's working behind the scenes as far as, oh, it's actually using ThorChain, it's actually using Maya, and things like that. So how does a front end kind of tie those together to make it seem like kind of the same thing? Like, for example, if you're, do you always have to manually select which network you're using, or is there some kind of way that it automatically detects which is the best kind of swap path, or how does that work?
Yeah, so from our side, we always try to bring the technology to the background and then kind of make it as simple as possible. There's always limitations when you work with crypto blockchain, because the data is not in a database. It's in the blockchain, and sometimes you have to query different parts. But basically, when you use our wallet, you just select the two assets that you want to swap, and everything is taken care of for you. So when you're selecting a pair that is between only TorChain, for example, I don't know, Bitcoin to AVAX, then it's simple, and it says just how much are you going to pay. And now we have a couple of more options where, if it's a large swap, as I said, you can decide for a breakdown of the swap. But if it's a swap between assets that also Maya offers, then we give the user the flexibility to also choose the chain they want to select. So that's another thing. And when it comes to assets that are not TorChain, so we always prioritize TorChain route and Maya route. And then for routes that are not TorChain or Maya, we believe that the aggregation business is a complete different animal. So you have mm-hmm. different skill sets that are necessary, because you need to be very efficient. It's a volume game. It's a small margin, and there's a lot of competition in this. So we think there's people who are quite experts on doing this, and that's why we have worked with the guys from Brango. They're also part of the TorChain ecosystem, and they have more than 50 chains integrated, and that allows us to have quick access to, or kind of piggyback a bit on what they're building. They have a native integration, and what makes it more complex for us is the wallet can be thought of as a Lego. So you have different parts. So, you know, for example, when Dash launched into Maya, before Maya was ready for the swaps and the LPs and everything, we were able to integrate Dash as a chain for the wallet. So the wallet, we can think of like the send and receive part as one part of the Lego. And then you have another part, which is the swapping, which is another part. And these are not always like linked together. So you can have one without the other, or you have one first and then the next one comes along. So there's other competitors that have focused on other ways of integrating or dynamically going through the routes that are selected. We have decided for the moment to kind of prioritize Torchain and Maya, and also for the reason that when you want to go, for example, right now our use case is if you want to go to Ethereum to some random coin that is in the beyond the top 100, right? So then this is a very unique case, and this is the long tail, and that's where we use the aggregator. But we feel that, for example, if you want to do Ethereum to stablecoin, and if you use Torchain, you're kind of paying up or you're kind of benefiting the ecosystem by providing fees and securing the network through this way. Whereas if you split a bit the fees, right, you can say, okay, Ethereum, but let's say you want to do a Bitcoin USDC transaction, you can do you can do it in one go through Torchain, or you could do like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then Ethereum 1H through 1H. So this splits up a bit the fees for Torchain, which could be in some way not entirely good, but at the same time, it could introduce some externalities. So now you're only, when you deal with only Torchain, then you're in a single ecosystem. Only the pools that are on Torchain are involved. So that's why we have prioritized for now. But of course, there's always, at the end, as we said, the customer is the one that is number one. And if the customers normally are price sensitive, and until now that was kind of the preferred route, going through somewhere else to save some bucks. But now with the streaming swaps, we're being way more competitive, and we're seeing some of that volume coming back directly to Torchain native, which is very nice.
Yeah, that's very, very cool the way it all ended up working out like that. So let's talk about the on-ramps, right? It's one thing that definitely got my attention. And this is not a feature that I personally care about because I only earn crypto since 2015. But most people, it's a big pain point when I'm trying to recommend. Someone says, "Hey, I want to try using crypto. How do I do it?" And it's usually, well, you got to sign up for Coinbase, and then that the whole KYC kind of hurdle just is annoying for someone who just wants to get like $100 worth and try it out. So I did notice that on the Thor wallet, there's a few like KYC free ways of buying under certain thresholds. And you want to talk about how that works and how you managed to pull that off?
Yeah, correct. So as you said, one of the key pain points for users are on-ramping and off-ramping. So from one side, users who say, "Oh, I'm interested, but how do I buy if I have fiat?" The governments overall have kind of gone through a bit of a choking process. So now it's becoming harder and harder for the average user to buy crypto, especially through normal exchanges. So now they're looking for alternatives. And we are a Switzerland-based team. And one of the things is that in Switzerland, you can buy crypto with one of the providers 1,000 francs per day, because it's considered as if it would be a cash transaction. So up to 1,000, you don't need to do KYC. But no KYC kind of is a confusing term, because people think it's also no data, right? Like fully private. And what no KYC really means is you don't have to provide your passport, you don't have to provide your address, but you do have to say, here's my phone number, because there needs to be a link where they can kind of say this person is the one who bought. So there's some small of data gathering that takes place. But you don't have to submit your documentation on who you are and where you live and so on. We have two providers, and one is for enabled for the US. The other one is more focused for European customers. This continues to be a pain point overall because the user experience is always something that we as a wallet take very important, or is very important for us. But and we're making a lot of changes to improve that. But when you work with on-ramp providers, most of the time you need to integrate kind of a like a plug and play interface, because they are the ones who got the license. So we as an interface, we are considered that we just enable the user to interact directly with the blockchain or directly with X protocol. But we, as no custodial, we never have the user's funds. We never have any sort of like custodian relationship. And because of this reason, we are considered always an interface. And with the on-ramps, you do need to keep certain information. You need to do some screening process. So for example, on one of our providers, depending on where you are trying to buy from, or depending on the payment type that you're doing, all of these are like automated processes where they assign a risk assessment and they enable like lower KYC amounts or higher KYC amounts. But for us, how we think about this, this is an extra service. We just try to partner with companies that have kind of experts on this area. And then we offer that to our users so that they can come to crypto as easy as possible. But still it's a challenge, and we're still looking for to provide the user with more alternatives so they can always decide what's the most convenient and what's the cheapest for them. That's on the on-ramp side. On the off-ramp side, it's also kind of problematic, you know, how do I spend my crypto? Mm-hmm. And that's why for us the card has been a major push this year. We're also working with a Switzerland-based company, and we have integrated them natively. The cool thing about it is that everything is on the blockchain. So all the accounting that the bank does, the debiting, the crediting, now has been taken care of by the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And we kind of read the blockchain to, you know, take that administrative burden away. And then just the part is, how do you make sure that the funds are available? And that's why our partner has a license, right? Because they need to have the funds in the Swiss National Bank and make sure that the money is always back one-to-one, things like that. But this is something that we believe is going to be massive, because you just need to download our wallet. And if you're in Europe, you can access the card, and then you can just go from, you have your Dash, you can swap it to USDC, top it up, and then start spending. Very soon also, what we are hoping that it's in the pipeline is that they will also enable you to buy, for example, you send a transaction with euro or with USDC, not only that you can spend with the card, but that you could also on ramp with the card. So let's say you send $1,000, mm-hmm. but you also want to buy Bitcoin instead of just sending it through the card. So that's also something that we're looking for. But yeah, these are processes, and we're trying to find more partners, and we are in the process of integrating a few extra options for the users.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like quite convenient, and that is something that has sort of been a constant battle since the crypto early days, has been the battle between convenience and then trustlessness / decentralization. And I remember a friend of mine sent me some video, or I saw some video of him excitedly buying some salad with Bitcoin back in, I think it was 2011 or 12. It was like way back in the day. And he said that the wallet, the Light wallet that he used, later ended up rug pulling and like taking everyone's money. And because back in the day, the technology wasn't there yet, so you had like completely custodial and also unregulated solutions. And then at some point there became, I think that was kind of the 2021 bull market era, was when we had the rise of these great crypto, these big crypto banks like crypto.com that just does everything for you. And then Coinbase, of course, you know, was kind of the original, but got a more fine-tuned product where it's just one product that does all your crypto stuff. You can buy, you can transfer. They want you to hold it there. You can stake, and you could sell and spend. And then, of course, more dubiously, you have things like Voyager, which, you know, I actually know people who are still caught up in like losing money on that thing. Mm-hmm. And then you have like FTX, which is like the big one that just had all this problem. And so, you know, it's for an understatement. But then I'm sort of starting to see, like, because if you have a, I guess, Thorchain enabled wallet, some kind of Thorchain and Maya enabled wallet, you can hold on to your own money, and then you could also do all your own trades. And so that part kind of always stuck to me. But what really sort of stuck out was with integrating the on and off ramps. It seems like something like Thor Wallet is now in a position to offer that like Coinbase style experience, maybe not yet, but getting like approaching that idea, but also not only letting you custody all your own funds so they can't go bankrupt and lose everything, but also they can't stop you from doing trades or do KYC and stuff on all the trading activity. And correct. So basically it's only the on and off ramps, only the small pieces of fiat that have to exist, kind of have to, kind of touch the old centralized rails. So do you think is this just something that Thorwald in particular is focusing closely on, or do you see this as a greater trend in the space? Do you think the whole space is starting to move in this direction?
So I think that Thor Wallet is in a unique position because we are DEX and wallet. So like most mm-hmm. of a lot of the competitors are like, they don't own the customer relationship, right? So we do have the ownership of the relationship with the customer because we are a wallet. And for example, when you have to use MetaMask or something, then the interface that you're using relies on another company to provide a service. So, you know, like if you are using one of our competitors and then you have to use MetaMask or XDeFi and so on, they're not fully owners of the customer relationship. So that is for us something that is very important and also very valuable because we are kind of controlling the entire user experience and we can provide a better service. And this is not always visible because people are used to, oh, I use this and then it doesn't work correctly or so on. But if you think about, for example, using Keystore, when we started all this DeFi experience, it was solely focused on Ethereum, then kind of came to other chains, Binance Smart Chain, Solana, and so on. But the idea of a multi-chain, let's say, crypto universe is recently new. We had some kind of ideas back in 2017 with the Atomic Swap and so on, but it never really caught on until mm-hmm. now. And the experience on MetaMask, for example, for cross-chain, it was not designed as a cross-chain interface. Right now, you are in Ethereum, and you have to click, you have to add a new chain, and all of this is very confusing for a newbie. And if you tell someone, oh, yeah, the new chain that is hot is whatever, Arbitrum, some of them are enabled by default, but if not, then it's quite complex. And this is something where we do actually have an advantage by owning the relationship on the customer because we on the background do everything. So for example, if you download the wallet, you don't need to enable, for example, Arbitrum or AVAX and so on. Like it just by default, and a user can immediately just do cross-chain without having to change chains and so on. So I think that gives us an edge. In terms of where is, if I see that other people are going in that direction, I think we're starting to see kind of the crypto companies looking for monetization avenues. Now we saw MetaMask introducing swap fees, I don't know, around a year ago, a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Now Uniswap also with their announcement this week that they're also starting to take in fees. And I think eventually that is gonna come. Like Uniswap has partnered with one of the largest providers for on-ramp. And I think that is just natural expansion for the wallet providers. I think for other providers it's going to be more complicated because, you know, you want to buy, then you can do it on your wallet. Why would you go to I don't know, like another place, sushi and on ramp there. So that's why it's been offered on the wallet level, as far as I have seen. And I think the challenge here is going to be we're starting to see some sort of regulatory arbitrage that will come up, right? So you have some countries that are going to be more pro crypto, and some countries that are going to be less friendly towards crypto, and that's going to create some users that either everyone will have to do KYC, otherwise you don't get access to it, or just a lot of people will be kind of outlawed or out just excluded from buying crypto from the traditional way. So we still don't know how it's going to play out. There's a lot of things to see. I do think that the US has a big role to play in how we move forward towards this. And I think there's going to be a change in terms of we will have a more pro-government towards crypto in the US eventually, and also a more pro-SEC government or leadership. Just the opportunities to be let it go. And I think eventually there will be some sort of rules, but this is all evolving. I think we just need to find the right set of rules where everyone is kind of sort of comfortable. But so far, what people have been trying to do is just kind of copy paste the rules that were applicable to banks to a completely different system that is just not possible. Yeah, like if you would just comply with initially what they wanted to do, then most crypto companies would just go bankrupt immediately. So I think that we will find the middle ground, and that will enable more clarity and also open for more business.
Yeah, now as we move towards, I guess, a more system where the regulation is more worked out, do you see any attack vectors from front ends? So for example, more recently we just saw Thor wallet shut down for a few days over concerns at Thor chain and specific, or sorry, ThorSwap. ThorSwap shut down for a few days over concerns that Thor chain through ThorSwap was being used to send stolen funds and things like that to exchange them for other things. And they seem, I'm not exactly sure what changes they've made since they went back online, but I heard some rumors about Uniswap maybe thinking about adding KYC requirements or something like that. And there's a bunch of things like that. And I do, of course, Tornado Cash is one of the ones that sticks out as a recent big example, where even though it's a decentralized protocol, the same team ran the most popular front end and raised VC money and all this other kind of stuff. And then they got targeted as a way to sort of shut down the system, even though it's a decentralized protocol. Very few people today are now using Tornado Cash. And so do you think that front ends for things like ThorChain are going to be targeted as a kind of way of shutting down access to the decentralized protocol? And where's Thor wallet with the whole regulatory landscape in the future?
Yeah, I think there's different layers to understand what's going on. From a more, let's say, top level, I think Bitcoin has been the only chain that has been really tested as, decentralized enough to be whatever happens if Bitcoin happens. I used to think Ethereum was on the same level, but since the changes to stake, this is still to be seen, right? Because now it's easier to kind of use money to get power and kind of block transactions. So I think from that perspective, we're still kind of have the judge to be set on whether we can truly call Ethereum decentralized enough to sustain government level attacks. But one thing that is clear is that we're seeing what you said with Tornado Cash, right? They say these guys are the ones that created Tornado Cash, even though, I mean, software is software. It's supposed to be free speech, but it also depends where you live, right? The US, Netherlands, I mean, everyone has different approaches to this. And in a way, nobody wants to be the Tornado Cash developer, where I think there's a lot of bad actors in the ecosystem, but at the same time, like most people who are building because they see that this could create a lot of benefits for the end user, providing more access to financial services. And I think a lot of this building is done in good faith. And it's just like, I think the simple example is, you wouldn't want your, you know, to tell how much is your, you know, that everyone knows what is your salary, right? Because this information is private. So financial privacy is quite important. And right, if you go to buy to a supermarket and then the supermarket says, oh, wait, this guy bought this 2 times more expensive in another place. Why don't I sell it 2 times that price for him? So like this information is not, I don't see it as if you have nothing to hide. I see it more as financial privacy is or should be a right. And then at the same time, we need to try to focus more on the bad actors, try to really create enforcement to people who do harm. But if you think about technology, is most of the time or should be thought as neutral, right? Because people do bad things with fiat, people do bad things with any sort of technology. For that purpose, you say, why don't we ban cell phones or why don't we ban computers, right? Like the, these are just tools and people decide to use them for good and bad. I do think that how the ecosystem is developing, and I think the first one who did this was Uniswap, because they were pressured. Some tokens cannot be displayed on the front, and that's how it started. You can still use Uniswap, right, through directly on chain, but this makes it more complex, very user unfriendly. And I think the next step towards that was, now you have to have this on-chain analytics. So like this address is tainted, this other thing is tainted. And I think these kind of like fast approaches have turned out to be backfiring, because people say, okay, this is stupid. And they just send like 1 cent to all the addresses, and then all the addresses were back blacklisted because they somehow got touched to Tornado Cash. I think in the particular case of Torchain ecosystem, as we saw now with Torswap, they went down, and now they're doing some checks on the addresses. I think this is going to be one of those intermediate solutions where you kind of comply and say, well, if this is a clear, like an address that is clearly using funds that have been stolen, I think there's a couple of avenues that the interface can do. One is just say, we don't serve you, and that's it. Another avenue is like, we take those funds, which is obviously for a non-custodial not possible, but for other transactions could be. You can say, okay, if we kind of freeze them. Has not been applied, but could be in a very extreme case. And I think if we go to the extreme and play it out, you know, like to spin a front end and provide an interface, if you really want to, it could become a game of, you know, whack-a-mole, which is what is already happening with the addresses, right? Mm-hmm. You say this address is tainted, but then they just use a new address and a new address and so on. So like, then it just comes, it's a game of trying to pretend a bit that you're doing this, where I think we need to come with a better solution that is more on the tech side and it's not available yet. But in the short term, I think what most interface, especially those that have more regulatory exposure, and it's not only regulatory exposure, you don't want to have your, for example, bank account as a company stop because they have some questions about you. So I think what will happen in the near future is that people will start doing some chain analysis to try to minimize this. At the end, Torchain structure and Torchain technology was created in a way where the idea was to be as resilient as possible. And they are also working towards that, right? With memo-less transactions. Now, basically you will have any wallet be able to do cross chains. So I think that will allow it to be more resilient, but I think, this is something where the place where the company is located will have a lot, a big role. And those that are in Europe or more friendly locations now will have an edge until we have more clarity.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So what are you most excited about in the future that's coming up for Thor Wallet or even for the ecosystem as a whole?
Yeah, so we are very excited about a couple of things. So first, the landing coming live on Torchain that just happened, but there's a couple of other things that will be going on with that. So like the streaming service for landing, now the streaming service for savers. On the Maya front, we were very excited that we have gone through the not only the integration period with them going live, like kind of going hand on hand with the entire process, but having Dash going live, having Koji going live has been kind of a big effort. And I think they're still learning, but it is there has been some times where Torchain has been down for whatever reason, and then you where else do you swap BTC to Ethereum? And Maya has also shown that having an alternative route is valuable. For cross-chain services, it's also going to be very valuable, right? Expanding Dash to any of the chains that Torchain has. And we're excited of what Maya is bringing soon. So for example, Arbitrum, the Arbitrum is the core infrastructure that we use for the card. So that kind of all of these plays together, having decentralized swaps to Arbitrum, having these swaps also to kind of bring it into the card. And basically, as you said, just a tiny little bit piece that you need to deal with fiat, that's what we integrate. But everything else basically is fully decentralized, fully non-custodial, and we love that. So what that's on the integration side. What we are also working on is we are bringing a new web app version, so we call the web app 2.0, and it's going to be a completely revamped website, which is focused on performance and kind of very streamlined. So that is kind of one of the big projects we have been working on, and we are very excited about that. And overall, we think that how we position ourselves is all this bear market has been for building. We have been focused on building. And 2024, with the halving incoming, I think the tide is changing, and that will mean more users and more activity. And one other thing for us, which is also exciting, is I think with the entire Tor swap and then later on the DDoS attack on Torchain, I think that has raised awareness on also Torchain being in the top swap protocols for a few days, kind of bringing the awareness that Torchain is now with the big boys, and it's time for everyone to kind of step up their game, right? When the DDoS attack happened, a lot of the interface were caught unaware of this vulnerability. And I think the entire ecosystem is moving towards a more resilient ecosystem in terms of the nodes going bare metal and the interfaces creating their own infrastructure. And that's also something that we have been working towards, to have our own infrastructure so that we can provide a much better and performant service to our users. So these are the main things that we're being focusing on. So this, the integrations, the new version of the web app, and a more performant interface, because what we want at the end of the day is that the user doesn't care if the interface or the infrastructure is down or whatever. They just want to come in, swap, go. Yeah, we're working towards that, and we hope that by the end of the month we already have very important change, and users can notice that improvement.
Oh, fantastic. So where should people follow you in ThorSwap if they want to keep up with you?
So they can always come into our website at thorwallet.org. They can also follow us in Twitter with ThorWalletDex, or they can follow me on Twitter as well as CryptoXC.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks very much for chatting today. Hope you have a good one.
Thank you. Have a nice day.